Hi everyone, I'm Greg Lowe from Down Under in Australia. Cosmos Down Under is a production from SQL Down Under. Cosmos DB is a trademark of Microsoft Corporation. Opinions and views expressed in the podcast are individual and don't necessarily reflect the opinions and views of SQL Down Under or of Microsoft Corporation. Introducing Show 11 with guest Kalyn Modi. Welcome. Our guest today is Kalyn Modi. Kalyn's a product manager on the Azure Cosmos DB team. He leads the AI and portal UI initiatives for the vector database service for Azure Cosmos DB for MongoDB vCore. He is also responsible for the go-to-market strategies and the growth of the product. So welcome, Kalyn.
Hey, thanks, Greg. Thanks for having me on the show.
So first thing I normally get people to do, tell us just a little bit about your role and where you're based.
Yeah, so hi, my name is Kalyn Modi, and I'm a product manager, as Greg said, on the Azure Cosmos DB team. I'm based out of Seattle, USA, in Redmond City, and I've been here for like around like eight to 10 months.
Awesome. Yeah. And this is with Mark Brown, and we had Tara Bhatia on the show earlier this week, so that's great.
And yeah, I love working with Mark and Tara. They're fantastic like coworkers to work with. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited to talk about Cosmos. I feel like Cosmos is the next big thing, and I feel like the whole team is really excited to look into it and like talk about it.
Outstanding. Yeah. So listen, what I wanted to talk to you about today were vector databases, and because we've now got offerings in Cosmos that help us do vector work. But I think we need to probably start at the beginning for a lot of the listeners. And like, why do we want a vector database in the first place? And what is it?
Yeah, that's a good question, Greg. As we all know, ChatGPT got released a year and a half ago, like 2 years ago. And literally everything got changed. Like the whole industry has been like disrupted. And that's when like people started to realize what they can do with their data. Mm-hmm. They never realized before like the amount of data that we're getting from like multiple sources and like these like modern applications and the workloads that the way they like handle. And like, for example, if you look at ChatGPT, right, like mm-hmm. you just ask a question in like natural language in English, and it's able to give you the answer back within seconds with the utmost accuracy.
Yeah.
Isn't that bizarre to think about? Like, we're just talking to a computer in the human language. Mm-hmm. I don't think this would have ever been possible like 10 years ago. Like, I don't think anyone would have thought about this.
No, I must admit, most people that look at it now are quite stunned if they haven't seen it before as to the level of what can be achieved. I think one thing I do find, though, of course, is that if you ask it a question, ChatGPT is equally confident if it's right or it's wrong. It comes across like something that knows what it's talking about. So there's still some caution there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, especially like I used to, like when I was in college and universities, we used to work with like SQL databases. And when you're working with SQL databases, for example, you need to like specify each field and each column in the database. And then if you had to run a query, then you would like go in and like, you know, like specifically go into the column and look for the answers. So we had to be very precise when coming to these like applications. But now, fast forward to 2024, you don't have to be precise. You just put it in English. You don't have to even write any code for it. So seeing the growth in LLMs and all like databases has been like really fascinating to me.
Yeah. It's been the case for a long time in many ways. A lot of the SQL classes I used to run in the 90s. In fact, one of my favorite things, even back then, were things like full text searches and so on, because I kept trying to say to people, I think the future is fuzziness, not preciseness. And it's really interesting to see that's how it's turned out.
Yeah. And that's why, like, when I talk about vector databases, like, you don't need to specify anything. So I would like, do you want me to go into the details of how all these things work? And like give your audience a brief intro of how exactly like what the databases store.
Yeah, in fact, I think that's a really good thing. So it's we say a vector database, but I suppose let's start with what type of vector is being stored in the database?
Exactly. So let's imagine, right? You have a bunch of data. What we do is we take paragraphs of text and like objects or like numerical data, mm-hmm. and we send it through like an embeddings model. Azure OpenAI has an embeddings model. What it does, it converts the piece of text or object into a floating point number yeah. based on the semantic meaning of that text. So then we store that vector, this is called vector embeddings, for yeah. example. The floating point number is the list of numbers, which is known as vector embeddings. And we store vector embeddings in a database. So for example, I ask the question, hey, what is your name? So what it does, the first thing ChatGPT or any like large LLMs do is like they convert that what is your name, they send it to the embeddings model, convert that into like a vector or like a floating point number, mm-hmm. and then goes into the database and looks for answers that are very similar to like in a database, like they have a mapping. And the closest that thing is to the question that we ask, it knows, you know what, if this is this close, this means this is the answer. So then it takes that point and then sends it back to our UI part and we get the answer in text. So that's basically how the whole process like works in like simple terms. Obviously, there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes, but yeah. this is like the high level overview for the people.
And the words, it's different to with full text style things. We used to have, they'd start with mm-hmm. words, they would stem the words down and so on. But when I look at the sort of vectors that are produced by this, it's interesting. They sort of take bigger words, like an example in the learn content talks about hamburger, and they were saying they'll take hamburger and like as separate pieces. But then a word like pear or something like that ends up staying as a whole. So it's not just a case of taking the words and just stemming them down to a core word. It's going further than that. So it sort of strikes me a bit like it looks somewhere between what used to be sort of word stemming and mm-hmm. And what other people use trigrams for a similar sort of thing. But yeah, it looks somewhere in between the two.
Yeah, it is. I'm not sure what trigram, to be honest. Like I haven't encountered with it. Do you mind telling me what it is?
Yeah, trigrams were an approach where, again, instead of sort of searching for the text, what you could do is sort of break words and things up into, again, typically three character values, and they were the things that mm-hmm. ended up being stored in an index, for example. A lot of this stuff seems to have come from some of that thinking, you know, it's how a lot of that works. And it's interesting. And of course, the beautiful thing with these searches is that they're not precise. Like you said, is they're optimized for sort of like, what do they talk about? Approximate
a closeness.
Association closeness. Or yeah. something like mm-hmm. that. Yeah. So it's let's find something that's close to that. And so what's the thinking, I suppose, in terms of having this in a database that's used for other purposes? Where if I look at, I don't know, there's a lot of vector databases out there, the Pinecone, Milvus, Chroma, you know, DeepLake, all these sorts of things. What's the upside, do you think, of having that in a tool like Cosmos?
Yeah, so if, for example, if you have like a third-party database, like a third-party single-purpose database like Pinecone or any other store, you will have to like ETL out of the transactional data stores, mm-hmm. and then you have to put it into their database and then surface that for vector queries and then do rack pattern and then bring the data back.
Yeah.
So there's like a lot of steps involved and you have to like constantly like throw it around. This results in like giving you the lag because like there is limitations to it, right? Because mm-hmm. you're always like sending around data, especially if it's like highly volatile data, then like they aren't best suited for rapidly changing information because there is a lag, as I said, in updating and querying the data. And this delay means that you're analyzing the data that's already been outdated by the time it's ready to use. But for example, if you go with like the first party service like Azure, Cosmos, or any other services, then you are getting a better experience with real-time AI, which is going to be quite straightforward. It's going to potentially going to cost you less and has the best integrations with other Azure services. So you just like, you get the whole service, you get the whole package, and you don't have to worry about other things. You just pay for one, and then everything is around it. So it's the ecosystem that you also get with other Azure services.
Yeah, I suppose, look, even just straight out of the box, the fact that you don't have a separate security model, you don't have a separate, all those things, you know, you already have a security model that's the same one that's used for other things, you know, and not yet another password or yet another sort of bit of security to go off onto a different style of database. Apart from sort of the augmenting large language models, which seems to be the most common thing, are you seeing it used for anything else much? Other sort of uses for this, or is in Cosmos, or is are the large language model things the main thing that people are using it for?
No, right now LLMs are the things that everyone's talking about.
Yeah, they're the flavor of the month. That's for sure.
The flavor of the month. So people, everyone wants to get into the LLMs, but obviously there are other use cases to this as well. You can do this for like searching text or like documents and like recommendation systems or like building chatbots. That's the LLM, but like text generation. And we have a lot of like users in Cosmos that use these technologies to based on what they are looking for. And sometimes it's not just LLMs. They have their own use cases because this also helps you in like detecting anomalies in your data. If you think there's something wrong in the data, then this would be able to help you figure it out and, like, you know, alert you to say, you know what, this is wrong. You need to take a look at it. So I feel like this type of like service has like a lot of applications in like all sorts of world. But right now we are focused on LLMs and like applications and all that stuff.
Indeed. Yeah, I've seen it in the past used for sort of like video and image analysis and I think a variety of things like that, even just standard recommendation systems and things like that. But certainly large language models seem to be the thing at the moment. And I think one of the things they talk about in that is that when you're querying a large language model, you need to have some sort of ongoing context. And being able to store that is, I think, one of the magical things about the chat GPTs and so on. The fact that, like, it's not every command you issue or sentence you type into it, or it doesn't treat that like it's never known anything before. It actually has context from the previous things you said.
We have the RAG pattern. Yeah, so this is why RAG is especially useful. For example, you have your own, let's assume that you're an e-retailer, right?
Yeah.
You want to remember what kind of inventory items you have in your storage or like what products you offer. So giving that context to your chatbot is extremely important because having like a generic chatbot is like just answering questions about what the weather is like, tell me the capital of like Sydney, like example, like generic questions. After that, there's no use case to it. Like people would like use it for a few days and then they would get bored out of it.
Yeah.
But having that like customized like experience, this is what people are looking for. And that's why we need RAG, like storing the question and the answer it gave earlier would help us understand what user is looking for.
Yeah.
And it would help us like give them the right answer in the future as well. And you don't have to like type it over and over again. If I say that I'm in Seattle, so next time I ask it, hey, recommend me shoes, it's going to know that I'm in Seattle. It's going to recommend me
actually,
shoes for Seattle.
Should define RAG too. So that's retrieval augmented generation. Yeah. No, that's awesome. Yeah. In fact, it's quite funny. I like with ChatGPT, even if I tell it things like ask it to respond as though you're an Australian and so on, you know, I love the fact it'll start going, okay, mate, you know, and then it sort of starts going on or I'm a Midwestern cowboy or something. It's just hilarious the way it comes back and tries to talk. One that interested me the other day, I spent a lot of time umpiring baseball when I was in younger days, which is kind of odd for an Australian. But anyway, and so I had a little umpire exam the other day, and I thought I'll just sort of run this through it and just sort of see, you know, like tell it it's a major league umpire, and you know, and so on and so on and so on, and yeah, it still did chill me a little bit that it was sort of 100% confident on everything, but wrong, you know, on probably 40% of the answers. So, but But even so, you know, still the things that it came back with were, what intrigued me is things that are tricky, it often came back with the right answer. And and that had me sort of fascinated, is that the really sort of tricky stuff it seemed to understand, and the things that were more common it didn't seem to understand as well. And it was interesting that when I commented about that on my blog or on Twitter or somewhere, one of my friends came back with an interesting comment. He said, of course, well, that depends on what it was trained on, right? And
exactly.
And it's interesting that if you think that if it just goes out in the world and listens to everything people are talking about baseball, it's only people, sort of maybe umpires, who would discuss tricky things. And so it would sort of learn from those people. But if you talk about more common things, if you went out to all the masses of people who think there are baseball fans out there, many of whom have completely the wrong idea about how things work, it's interesting that that's probably what it's trained on. Because it's got no way of knowing that person is actually, you know, a well-trained umpire, and that's some guy who sits in the stands and screams because he thinks something's wrong and he doesn't understand it.
That's the scary part. Like, these LLMs, they're not able to know whom to trust. Like, obviously, like, the common knowledge, everyone can give you common knowledge.
Yeah.
But as higher up you go, you, like, you know, like, you root out all the common people. You just, like, have the experts talking about it.
Yeah.
But that's why they are so able to, like, answer all the tricky questions, because you're just having information coming from one or two sources, and they are pretty experts at it.
Yeah, the people who actually know are the only ones who discuss it. Yeah.
They have, like, spent years researching about it and, like, talking about it. So they know what they're talking about. But when you ask, like, the common question, you just get input from, like, 10,000 people.
Yeah.
And it just, like, it doesn't know which one to pick. So it's going to randomly pick one out of them, which makes sense, and then gives you the answer. So that's one thing that we need to, like, figure out, I feel
as an industry. For sure. But yeah, storing that context, they were saying that the storing it as the embeddings, as vector style data, is allowing them to store really efficiently the context and everything surrounding the questions, because, you know, again, it needs to already know that, but it needs to know that in a pretty concise sort of way. And so, look, with the implementation in Cosmos DB, of course, we've got a multi-model database with Cosmos. Where are we at with which of the models play in this space at the moment?
So we have a lot of, like, we have a lot of services in the Cosmos. For example, there's this thing like Azure Cosmos DB for MongoDB vCore, which supports the vector embeddings and vector search. We're going to have the NoSQL one, the NoSQL API coming up with vector search pretty soon, with native vector search. So it's right built into the engine. So that's the good thing about Cosmos, is, like, we have the vector embeddings, vector indexes, and vector search right built into the engine. So you don't need other services to do all this for you.
Do you know how that fits with the Postgres offering, though? Because I'm thinking Postgres normally has a native vector search now built into that as an option. Is it now using the things you're doing for the other ones, or is it still using whatever comes out of the box with Postgres?
I think it's using whatever comes out of the Postgres. And also, they also have the native vector search built into the engine as well. They use the PG extension to build a lot of, like, AI extensions based on, around, like, vector search and all that stuff.
Yeah. Hi, this is Greg coming to you from another time and place. If you have a data-related project that needs to get off to a great start with the right architecture, or if you have an existing project that's off the rails, why not contact us? We help organizations of all sizes, from startups to tier one financials, and we can help you too. Check us out at sqldownunder.com. No, that's good. And so you're saying with the NoSQL API, that's not there yet, but coming somewhere along the way?
Let's say we should have something in the next few months.
Mm-hmm. Good. Now, in terms of building applications and things like this, are there restrictions on, client versions or things like this? Like, how What does somebody need to know to be able to start working with it?
To be honest, literally nothing. Just go on YouTube. You should have access to YouTube, and you should be able to learn about vector databases and vector. I've done a bunch of like tutorials as well, a bunch of like quick through demos where I literally walk you through on how you can build this application using just Cosmos, Azure Cosmos DB from MongoDB vCore, and like just one other service for your front end. I've also done a demo where you can start your own drag type application without writing a single line of code, and people loved it. And people, like it's on my YouTube, and there's like a bunch of places. So people don't need a lot of information. You just have the mindset of like learning new things and be open to it, because this field has a lot to offer and they can solve a lot of problems for a lot of people. You just need to like understand a little bit, few things, and by watching the videos and like documentations.
I'm imagining that the more you try and get it to answer questions about your own data, again, that's going to largely depend on how you've stored that, your own data, and just how approachable that is from a query point of view.
Yeah, so it really depends on how you store the data and how easily accessible it is for the index to find that data when building this application. Because if you're not able to find the data that you have, you're not able to, it's not useful for you. So having it the right way to store your data is really crucial, and to see that the indexes are well implemented with what they're looking for is really crucial when building these applications.
There's also, with this, we have had Azure AI Search in place and very sophisticated for a period of time. And there's been the Azure Cosmos DB integration with Azure AI Search. And does this sort of overlap this in some ways, or how do you see the positioning of both of those?
Yeah, I think in my sense, Azure Cosmos DB is a database. Versus Azure AI Search, it's not a database. Like, for example, if you want to search through like multiple like documents and multiple places, like if you want to go and search through like SharePoint, Word documents, Excel sheets, you would want to use AI Search. But if you want to search through a database where you store all your data, then I would recommend going ahead with Azure Cosmos DB.
Great. And so, look, that's getting us up towards time. Caitlin, What have you got coming up? Will people see you with anything that's happening? Or
yeah, there are a lot of like exciting features coming up in the field of AI for Azure Cosmos DB. We're going to soon announce Azure Cosmos DB conference. That's in end of April.
Yeah,
and then we're going to have.
Yes, Bill Tara was telling me she's speaking at it. She was excited about this on elasticity related features. Yep. And so you're speaking at that as well?
Yeah, so that's a big announcement. I'm also speaking at a few at the conference com, and then we'll have Build 2024 in May, where we'll be releasing a lot of like AI features for Azure Cosmos DB. So there's a lot of things coming up. I would really recommend people following our Azure Cosmos DB like, platform on LinkedIn, Twitter, so any other social media, and then they'll be updated with a lot of these AI features.
And look, is there any limitation in trying these things with the free offering of Azure Cosmos DB?
As of now, you don't have any limitations. If you want to try free tier, go ahead with it. But you might not get all the services with free tier.
Sure.
It's a good way to like get started. But if once higher up you go, you definitely want to like scale up to higher tier so that you can unlock all the features like the HNSW algorithm, the indexing algorithm that I was talking about. It's not available with free tier, but we do have IVF support.
So what do you need to be able to use that?
So you need like around M40 and above. So we have like cluster tiers based on M25, M30, M40 and above. So you need at least M40 to get started with HNSW indexing algorithm.
Excellent. Okay. So listen, thank you so very much for taking part today, Caitlin.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg. It was really fun.
All good. Thanks.